can do it. The time is now. Let's get to it. Just believe. Just believe. Just believe.
In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents the authentically entertaining voice of truth and inspiration. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with the always unforgettable, ever insightful conversations that captivate our fascination and insatiability for the inspiring moments of real life journeys, as we, as one, strive for higher planes of existence and a better understanding of our true selves and the world in which we live. Always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. Good for all and all for good. And now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Well, talk about changing the world. Today we're going to change history, and maybe not history per se, but maybe how we think of it or maybe what we know of it. Our guest challenges us with some very interesting questions as far as I'm concerned. Was America truly unknown to the outside world until Christopher Columbus, quote, discovered it in 1492? Ancient civilizations researcher, our guest, Frank Joseph, reveals fascinating evidence from his new book, The Lost Colonies of Ancient America, a comprehensive guide to the pre-Columbian visitors who really discovered America. Could a people gifted enough to raise the Great Pyramid 4,000 years ago have lacked the skills necessary to build a ship capable of crossing the Atlantic? That's a good question, actually. Here's another one for you. Did the Phoenicians, who circumnavigated the African continent in 600 BC, never consider sailing farther? Were the Vikings, the most fearless warriors and seafarers of all time, terrified at the prospect of a transoceanic voyage? How are we to account for artifacts like an Egyptian temple accidentally unearthed by a Tennessee Valley Authority worker in 1935, I'm assuming in Tennessee, or an elaborate Phoenician plate in Utah here in America? And what about Viking wharves and houses near Boston? The author of several popular books, Frank Joseph, is our guest today. He's also the editor-in-chief of Ancient American Magazine and has appeared multiple times on the very popular Coast to Coast AM and other popular programs, including ours, Life Changes with Filippo, here right after this.
True performance takes more than just working out. Every day we demand more from our body. But what does your body demand? Hunger is not your body's call for empty calories. It's your body asking for nutrients it's lacking. It's time to reward your body with Boku Superfood, made from the world's finest organic ingredients, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential trace nutrients, all developed naturally and organically from nature's most nutrient-dense foods. Boku Superfood is quite possibly the best thing you can feed your body. So listen to your body. Reward it with pure, raw, beautiful food. Boku Superfood.
Clean water is not enough. Reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb, and rob minerals from the body. IonWay's ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to 6 times better. Water from an IonWay's ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. An ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IonWay's water systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IONWAY's water systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook, and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
Well, it sure is, Filippo. And last week on our show with our guest, Maestro Dino Zonic, I like saying that. In any event, I mentioned that I was going to be singing this past weekend, in Rancho Mirage, or I might have said Palm Desert, but in any event, for in a two-day Italian festival where I was the headliner. And I was, and it was delightful. And I mentioned that I like to tell stories during the shows. I don't just sing. As you can imagine, I tell stories. And some of the stories that I share, since a lot of these that I do are Italian festivals and I celebrate my Italian heritage, I talk about some of the things that I would learn growing up Italian-American from my family and from our friends and family that were also Italian or Italian-American. So last week I shared one of those stories. This week I'm going to share another one because this weekend I talked about this very thing on stage in front of all these people, most of whom agreed with me, because whether they are from Italy or whether they're from Mexico or whether they're from the Soviet Union or from China, other people know other things. And what do I mean by that? Well, there are other people from other countries and other cultures. So, for example, I shared on stage that I would go to school here in America and come back and share with my family at the dinner table where we would gather every night, and I would share what I learned. And then my father would correct the history, and he'd say, "That's not true. The way that really happened is like this." And then he would share with me what he knew from growing up and being raised and being actually educated in Italy. And of course, I didn't believe my father because I was learning it in school from the teacher. And I then grew up to learn my father was right. That everything he said was not true about what I was learning at school. My father was right. So I grew up with this questioning ability. I had to question my father. I had to question the teacher. And my father would always ask me to question. He'd say, "Question what your teacher is saying. Your teacher is only opening a door, potentially. It's you who have to step through and find out the truth or learn more." And so as I share these stories, people tell me about their cultures and what they know from their culture and how we in America don't know what's true about their culture or maybe even what's true about our culture that they might have studied. And of course, I questioned and thought, is that true or not true? I remember being in, where was I? In the Czech Republic, I think, or no, maybe it was Hungary. I think I was in Hungary, and there was a war going on. I think it was the war. I don't remember which one. But in any event, what they were reporting there was very different than what I came back to learn that was being reported here in the United States. So I question. And that's why I'm excited to have our guest on the show, because he has questions too. And he has answers. And so I'm curious to see how I feel about his answers after we speak, especially since some of what we're going to be talking about is Cristoforo Colombo, Christopher Columbus, and being an Italian-American and having been educated by my father as well as the American school system, I have various ideas in my mind about what really happened there. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Our guest tonight is Frank Joseph, who, among other things, is an author and the editor-in-chief of Ancient American Magazine. And he's appeared on many shows, including the very popular Coast to Coast AM, and we're very happy to have him here. Frank Joseph, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much, Filippo. It's a real pleasure to be here, and I love your insightful introduction.
Well, what do you have to say about that, then?
Well, what struck me was a quote from Mark Twain, who said that when he was a young man, he regarded his father as a fool who knew nothing at all, and that after Mark Twain grew up to be a man, he was surprised by how much his father had learned in such a short time.
I'm familiar.
And also, the other thing I need to emphasize is that I have come to the conclusion, and as others have as well, more than the conclusion, the strong belief that Christopher Columbus was not the first person to discover the Americas, that he was preceded by numerous discoverers hundreds and thousands of years before himself. However, his achievement is not diminished in the least by any of these great explorers, because the Romans that came here long before him, even long before modern Spain or Italy came into existence, going all the way back to the Phoenicians and the Egyptians, the Sumerians, they were virtually all here. Their great achievement was lost with the fall of the Roman Empire, because the Dark Ages that ensued after the fall of Rome lasted for five centuries. That's a long time. And all that knowledge, all that achievement that had been piled up for so long was lost. And it was only during the Renaissance, during the time of Christopher Columbus, he was a Renaissance man, that some vague scraps of information and memory from those times began to be put together. And it was based on some of those suppositions that Christopher Columbus put together the rediscovery of America. His achievement was to make a constant contact between the old world and the new, which the others had not done. So against that backdrop of all that information that had been lost, he was going really through unknown seas, or forgotten seas, I guess is a better way to place it. So in the beginning of my book, The Lost Colonies of Ancient America, I pay homage to Christopher Columbus and indicate that he was really just in line with all of these other great discoverers of the Americas.
Well, that's quite interesting, and I'm really happy to hear that. And I'm curious, why we would be taught something different. Did we not know this until you came along, or might there be a reason we shouldn't know this?
Well, I am hardly the bringer of these tidings. My book is different only in this regard. It's important, I think, for our listeners to understand that I am not an archaeologist. I don't claim to be that. I am a science writer. And what I've done is to collect the tremendous amount of work of other researchers, scientists and archaeologists, geologists, oceanographers, and so forth, who have made tremendous discoveries of physical hard proof, not theories, but actual material proof of visitors from the ancient old world in the Americas that established themselves here and came here not just as castaways, although some of them did arrive that way, but as refugees from oppression in the old world, or they came here for specific goods like drugs, for example, or minerals, or the ability to produce certain kinds of crops that they didn't have. And the difference between that time and ours is really not that profound. Today you have something called industrial espionage, in which one corporation or large company will keep many secrets, industrial secrets, one from the other. This was the same thing in the ancient old world when you had the Romans, who were in competition with the Phoenicians. They had their secret agendas in the same way. And so when they traveled to the Americas, it was mostly a very secret affair. The Phoenicians, we know, went to such extreme lengths to keep their contacts in the ancient world, in the ancient Americas, known to their competitors, the competitors, the Romans, that they spread all kinds of stories about how if you sailed too far into the Atlantic Ocean, you'd fall off the end of the world. They promoted the idea that the world was flat, even though they knew that was not the case. That was all always to discourage competition. They said that if you sailed any further into the Atlantic, you'd run into giant sea monsters, or the seas would begin to boil, and so forth. And this was all put out as propaganda to discourage the competition. And all of these peoples did that to one degree or another. So it's only understandable that so much of their achievements was lost, and that Columbus had to reassemble what he could find. And really, his achievement is quite unique and momentous, and is not diminished in the least by any of his precursors. But it's important to understand that he was part of this great discovery. He was the climax of this great American discovery that went back many thousands of years before himself.
So, Frank, I'm curious now, when we come back, why is this important? Now, you're not the first person, obviously, that said this, but you're certainly ringing a loud bell and saying that this is indeed the case. And so if we buy into this, why is it important that others were here before Christopher Columbus? And how might that change how we view America, or how might that have changed history if that had been written in the books long before now? We're talking to Frank Joseph as our guest today on Life Changes with Filippo. We'll be right back with him right after this.
Are you like many people who want to make positive changes and improvements in your life and in the world around you? Do you ever feel like there's something holding you back from achieving your true potential? Join Stefan and Shaylee Schifeidel with the Tad James Company, the world's largest NLP, coaching, timeline therapy, and hypnotherapy training institute. Get ready for a life-changing experience that will give you the tools to transform your life through positive change and will help you create the future you want now. Their training programs are designed to provide you with the revolutionary knowledge, skills, and techniques necessary to effectively create long-lasting and life-changing effects. Discover more about neuro-linguistic programming and timeline therapy at www.nlpcoaching.com or call 888-440-4823. That's 888-440-4823. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
Well, you are listening to Life Changes with Filippo, and this is Filippo, and our guest today is Frank Joseph, who is an author, and he's the editor-in-chief of Ancient American Magazine. You can go to www.ancientamerican.com to see the magazine, subscribe, and buy all kinds of DVDs and all that. We're going to give that number where you can actually call and order books and DVDs and CDs directly from the website 24/7, actually, in just a little bit. But before we do that, so Frank, how does my life change now that I know this?
Well, I think this whole epic story, this vast story of our origins, it's our story. I mean, it belongs to us. It's our incredible legacy. I can tell you that I've been researching this for this whole idea of the contacts from the ancient old world in the Americas for several decades now, for about the last 30, going on 40 years now. And what made this book different for me is that I didn't intend to write it at all. The publisher, New Page Books, they asked me to write a book which would be a little bit different than others on this subject. They wanted me to put together a single volume in which each chapter would be devoted entirely to one people that came over here. So the first chapter begins with the Sumerians, the earliest known people from Mesopotamia in today's Iraq, who created civilization and their impact in the Americas. Chapter 2 is on the Egyptians, followed by the Minoan Greeks, all the Phoenicians, Romans, etc., all the way on up to the early pre-Columbian Christians who arrived here. So there's about 14 different peoples that arrived here for very different purposes. And the drama that they went through, the rise and fall, the success and failure of their impact here, really for the first time impressed upon myself, and as I say, I've been studying this for decades, the grand sweep of it finally made itself known. It sort of revealed itself, because here I put together certainly not all of the evidence, because it's huge that establishes their presence here, but the best evidence. I got together the very best, the most up-to-date evidence to show how these people arrived here, when they did, what they came here for, what happened to them. And putting it all together in this one book for the first time created a kind of a panorama that I never realized before. It was a kind of a breathless experience. So I think, to answer your question, is that this is our story. We are still told in textbook versions of the past that before 1492, nothing of significance happened here, when in fact, huge cities and great empires strove against each other and achieved great heights of material success. We can learn also from some of the experiences that they had, how they mistreated themselves and the native peoples, how they got along with themselves and the native peoples. The story is as wide and as deep as human history anywhere. And so instead of America, the Americas, being relatively a cultural desert before 1492, we find it, in fact, an incredibly rich area that is part of our legacy, part of our heritage. And I think it's vitally important for us to know where we came from so we can understand how we got here and where we are going. That's the great utility of history anywhere. A people without a history is a people without a future. It's a people that is blundering through the present.
You're absolutely right, and I'm realizing now, especially with what I said at the beginning of the show, as I'm talking to you, though I identify as an American, I identify as an American with an Italian heritage, because both my parents came from Italy, and for the first 5 years of my life, I didn't speak Italian, didn't even know that I was in America, and I was actually born here because our community was so Italian. So with that came all the history that goes back thousands of years, and that's, I always felt like I had that foundation. And now if I'm putting myself into the shoes of somebody that was born in America that think their history is 200 years old, I could understand where this, well, it's earth-changing period because America is a big part of the earth, but as a civilization, or at least as a culture, our culture is much, much deeper, and this is fascinating.
Well, I think you were deeply gifted by being brought up in a specific ethnic group like that, a rich ethnic group such as the Italians, and seeing the world through the lens of this particular culture in an early part of your life. And then as you get older, it expands, your view expands, but nonetheless, your roots are still there. And I only wish that really all of us had that same ethnic consciousness early on. I think a lot of that has been homogenized out of existence, and it's a terrible loss. This doesn't mean one has to abuse other people or regard oneself as better or worse than anybody else, but it gives a frame of reference that I think it was a great benefit to you. I know it was a great benefit to you. It's part of the richness of life, I think, to include one's roots and then to sort of grow beyond them but with them at the same time. And I've tried to really present something similar to that in The Lost Colonies of Ancient America, because this is the story of our continent and the South American continent, and it's part of our, like I said, our roots, our own roots. I mean, we have a lot to be proud of here. You don't have to go to ancient Egypt to see very old prehistoric ruins. You see them right here in the Americas, and I show people just where to go and see these magnificent structures. and to learn the stories of the flesh it out with the human stories that were responsible for the creation of these great structures. It's really quite impressive.
Well,
I'm
fascinated by this, and I want to know specifically where these are. I haven't had the pleasure of reading your book yet, but you're not just saying that the Phoenicians came or the Greeks came. I mean, you're saying there were 12, the Sumerians. I mean, you listed 12 or 14, however many different civilizations that came here. And that's not to mention the civilizations that I thought were already here, which were the American Indians. So did you said sometimes they cohabitated and sometimes they didn't get along. How did that really play out?
Well, it played out depending on how relations between these various peoples evolved over time. And human beings were the same then as now. They had their own agendas, and sometimes those agendas were very copacetic, and other times they were at loggerheads. An example of that is, and we'll talk about the Sumerians, are the earliest. They're not the earliest peoples here in the Americas by any means, but they are the reason I included them in the first chapter is because they're recognized by mainstream historians as the very first modern-day civilizers. In other words, the Sumerians were a people who lived in Mesopotamia between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers in what is today Iraq as the first builders of cities as we know them today, city-states, actually. And over time, these city-states began to coalesce into a modern nation or close to a modern nation called Sumer. Some people refer to it as Sumeria, but generally referred to as Sumer. And they were very great people. They arose to great prominence about 5,500 years ago, a very long time ago. They created writing and cuneiform tablets. They had bureaucracy. They had irrigation. They created a system of leadership, weights and measures, codified religion, beautiful material objects, high culture, art. All the things that we associate with a high civilization are attributed to the Sumerians. And we find that during the high point of their culture, about 3,000 years before Christ, about 2900 BC to be a little bit more specific, they created a magnificent city called Ur. And at the center of their city was a magnificent pyramidal structure called a ziggurat. And the great ziggurat of Ur still exists in ruinous form. And when this great culture arose, strangely enough, at the same time, a very similar culture arose on the Pacific coast of Peru. And we see that the two civilizations in Peru, and this is the oldest known civilization in the Americas, 2900 BC, a place called Caral, and the structure that's there bears a very strong, marked similarity to the Sumerian ziggurat. And that's the first point of reference, but it isn't the only one by any means. What happened was is that shortly after 2900 BC, the Sumerians underwent a population drop. They suddenly lost their population and went way down. That's because they were overtaken by a local enemy called the Akkadians. They were a Semitic people. At the same time, at the same moment in history, Caral in Peru, this very Sumerian-looking city, underwent a huge population surge. We also find that the great production of goods at Caral in Peru was centered on cotton, the mass production of cotton. Well, we know that the Sumerians were great lovers of cotton, but they found it very hard to grow in Mesopotamia, so they would import it at great expense from India. And here you have these great cotton producers at work in Peru. Beyond that, the details begin to really coalesce at this point. In North America, we find dozens, possibly hundreds, of authentic cuneiform tablets from ancient Sumer, and that these cuneiform tablets are not fakes, they're not modern reproductions, they've been actually authenticated by conventional archaeologists who do not discuss these things in public. And yet these cuneiform tablets have been found in people's gardens. They've been excavated in New York City, for example, from some old buildings that were dug down into their foundations. And the most famous of all these cuneiform tablets was stolen from around the neck of Chief Joseph when he was captured in the 1870s by a U.S. cavalryman. And that this tablet, which made no sense to the cavalryman, he asked Chief Joseph, "What is this?" And Chief Joseph, who was chief of the Prince Nez Indians, said that this tablet means that you are not the first white man to have arrived here in this country. That my ancestors were met by these white people who came a very long time ago. Hmm. They did not fight us, that they intermarried with us, some of them, and I have some of the blood from this man who gave us this tablet. Now, this tablet, which was totally inscrutable at the time it was found in the 19th century, was put in the Annapolis Museum, where it is today in Maryland. And it was only decades later that that tablet could be translated. It's cuneiform. It is a mundane receipt written in Sumerian around 2,200 years before Christ, a receipt for a heifer, a kind of a cow, used in a sacrifice to celebrate a woman who became a priestess in the moon goddess cult. So, obviously, this authentic Sumerian tablet, small tablet, was given to Chief Joseph's ancestral family and passed down and put in his medicine bag as a sacred ancestral object. And when you realize that this is not just one like this, but the dozens, possibly hundreds, of Sumeriform, cuneiform tablets, Sumerian cuneiform tablets have been found since the 19th century, are still being found from time to time. This is part of the tremendous impact the Sumerians made on both North and South America. And I go into great detail. It's a long chapter, and talk about some other objects that are found.
Actually, when we come back, I want to talk about bigger things than objects. I want to talk about actual places in the United States where people can find pyramids or actual cities, and that I have actually never heard of. I did see while doing the research a couple of videos on you where you talk about that, and that was one of the things that I found most fascinating, and I think our audience will too. When we come back, we're talking to our guest, Frank Joseph, editor-in-chief of Ancient American magazine and author. We'll be right back after this.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of four and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen, and the kids laugh at him, then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, "I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up." A second grader named Chandler said, "I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life." And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, "This is a great story. Bravo, Shadow." The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater.
What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
Well, life is certainly changing, and so is history, actually. If you want to learn more, our guest, ancient civilizations researcher Frank Joseph, reveals fascinating evidence from his new book, The Lost Colonies of Ancient America, a comprehensive guide to the pre-Columbian visitors who really discovered America. If you want to know the book intimately, if you want to have a copy, if you want DVDs and CDs, you can go to ancientamerican.com. That's the magazine that he is the editor-in-chief of, ancientamerican.com, or you can call this number and order 24/7 a book, a DVD, or all of the above. 1-877-494-0044. That's 1-877-494-0044. Frank, you say that in America there are actual pyramids and cities where people can go and see, but I don't know that I have ever seen this on TV or that anybody has talked about it until I came to know you. We're talking places like Utah and Tennessee. Tell me more.
Well, as far as the cities are concerned, there were ancient cities here. Actually, none of the cities exist except in reports and in trace evidence. However, some of their larger structures still exist and are virtually intact. And there's one particular that I would urge our listeners to look up. They can see it on Wikipedia or then go online. It's a famous site. It's called the Grave Creek Mound. It's in West Virginia. It's in not too far from the border. And it's a huge mound. It's nearly 70 feet high. It has a diameter of almost 300 feet and was made with something like about 60,000 tons of earth. It's a great burial mound. And in 1838, some treasure hunters were digging into this mound. They assumed that it had been built by Indians and that it contained perhaps some gold, some treasure, they imagined. So they dug a vertical shaft right from the top of the Grave Creek Mound. And they broke into a chamber, interestingly enough, and the chamber had a number of skeletons in it. However, no gold. So they continued their vertical shaft down. They came to another chamber, and this one had only a single burial in it, and the skeleton was unusually large. It belonged to a man who was over 7 feet tall. Mm. This is another mystery that is unknown to most Americans, but is quite familiar to mainstream archaeologists, that there was a race of people in the Americas that often produced individuals who were well over 7 feet tall. They were referred to as the Allegheny. That's a very famous name. It means people of the rivers or people of the mountains. It's an Ojibwa word, and it refers to these 7 foot tall people. The largest female skeleton of the Allegheny ever found was 6 feet 9 inches tall, and skeletons, male skeletons, well over 7 feet, belonging to the Allegheny.
And are you going to tell me? Are you going to tell me that in that chamber they found a basketball?
No, but they found something more important than that.
Okay.
They found a very small tablet, and the tablet was inscribed in a Celtic language, that was written and spoken in Portugal, and dated back to about 200 B.C., and the language was translated not at the time that it was found in 1838. It was similar now to that story I told you about the cuneiform tablet. It's a kind of a Celtic language. It's called Ibero-Celtic. It was not known in the 19th century. It was not translatable into the mid-20th century. Mm. And the inscription reads, "Tumulus," in other words, the mound itself, referred to as a tumulus, "in honor of Tadach, his wife caused this engraved tile or tablet to be inscribed." Now, what's interesting is that this Ibero-Celtic language, being totally unknown in 1838 when this was found, and being transcribed and translated only in the mid-20th century, is not unique. That other tablets in the Ibero-Celtic language have been found in West Virginia and in Ohio. At least another four or five have been found. And this is a place now where our listeners can go and see an actual monument that was made by and for Celtic visitors to the Americas about the time of Christ, right around the time of Christ. And this is about 2,000 years ago. This is a very important period because this is when the Romans were defeating the Celtic armies throughout the continent of Europe and expanding the Roman Empire. And it fits perfectly in the historical context. And the Grave Creek Mound is a very impressive structure. It's very similar to the Celtic burial mounds that are found today in Salzkammergut in Austria. And is one example of the pre-Columbian impact that was made on ancient America.
Did the American Indian... I'm thinking at least I would imagine this part of the history is true, that when the American Indians died in great masses or were murdered, but in any event during that time, were any of these other civilizations still around?
The last of these civilized impacts made on the Americas was really not too long before Columbus. Certainly within 100 or so years before, we know that the medieval Scandinavians, who came long after the Vikings, hundreds of years after the Vikings, their ancestors, were here. An example of that is the Kensington Runestone, which was found in central Minnesota in 1898. And the Kensington Runestone is this large boulder, a granite boulder, that's inscribed on two sides with the story of a medieval expedition that was sent from Gotland, which is an island off the southern coast of Sweden in the North Sea, and that this Kensington Runestone was dated to 1361. This runestone was regarded as a fake, as a fraudulent effort to discredit archaeologists and so forth throughout the 20th century. But as recently as the year 2000, between 2000 and 2002, Scott Walter, who is a professional university-trained geologist who runs and owns his own award-winning geological laboratory in St. Paul, Minnesota, examined the Kensington Runestone with state-of-the-art equipment, including an electron microscope, and was able to determine through geological criteria that the stone could only have been carved more than 500 years ago, that the weathering and the runic forms that appear on the Kensington Runestone are completely consistent with an authentic inscription dated to the early to mid-14th century. So here is hard physical evidence beyond a shadow of a doubt that there were medieval Scandinavians in the upper Midwest of North America almost 100 years before Columbus. And this would be among the last of the pre-Columbian peoples. Actually, there were pre-Columbian peoples here when Columbus was still alive. I'm referring especially to the Basque fishermen, who we know were off Labrador and Newfoundland. So he had these other contacts to go on, to be sure. Now, for example, those Basque fishermen who were arriving off the coast of Labrador just a few years before Columbus arrived, they wanted to keep their fishing sources secret. So again, that was very consistent with what the ancient explorers had experienced. They wanted to keep their contacts unknown to potential competition. And it was, as I say, Columbus's great achievement that he opened up the Americas publicly, really, for the first time. And that before, they always had their own private schedules and agendas. Well, but the evidence, I think, is overwhelmingly in favor. If I was into a court of law trying to prove or disprove the existence of ancient old world visitors to the Americas, I could easily bring in a guilty verdict because the scientifically proved, established physical evidence for their existence here in the Americas is beyond question.
You know, Frank, earlier you said I reminded you, my monologue reminded you of a Mark Twain quote, and what you're telling me is reminding me of a Peter, Paul, and Mary song. When will we ever learn? When will we ever learn? So when we come back in the few minutes that we have remaining, what can we learn from this? And what can we be teaching each other, our children especially? How can we rewrite the history books? What can we share with each other and grow as we move forward and either right some wrongs be less ignorant. With that, I'm Filippo on Life Changes with Filippo here with our guest Frank Joseph, and we'll be right back with him.
Are you achieving your highest potential? Do you know what that looks like? Louise Ashby Life Coaching makes it a mission to bring balance and abundance to every area of your life, giving you the opportunity to do and be all that you've dreamed. Anything is possible if you just believe. Contact author and motivational speaker Louise Ashby for your complimentary session and see if her individualized style is for you. You can email Louise at louiseashby.org. That's LOUISEASHBY.org or telephone 323-592-3181. That's Louise at louiseashby.org or telephone 323-592-3181.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page.
Well, I do encourage you to visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com or lifechangesnetwork.com. And while you're there, you'll also find this show in our archives, and you can hear it again with our guest, Frank Joseph. And there you'll also see a website, ancientamerican.com, where you can learn more about Frank, and you can buy books and DVDs and CDs, and of course you can find him on the net. He's got other books out, and they're all fascinating subject, one after the other, actually. But we hardly had enough time to talk about this one. Frank, the subject is so deep, and there's so much to learn from this. And you kind of answered this question earlier, but it does beg the question, what can we learn? How can we share the story differently? And let's help people be less ignorant, shall we? What do you say?
That's quite good. It's kind of a strange thing. As I reread my own book, and I see one chapter after another, these great people came here, they achieved wonderful things, and they vanished, one after the other. What happened? What are we to learn from this? The first and great lesson to arise is that human civilization runs in cycles. it does not run in a linear line. It's not a straight line. Just because we have atomic bombs and refrigerators does not make us the pinnacle of everything that's come before. What happens is that civilization is a sort of the macrocosm of the man. The man is born, he goes through a period of youth, growth, maturity, decline, and death. And this is the same story for our civilizations. Mm. So the question then is, why? Why are we going through these cycles? That's what history tells us. We go through these cycles. Why do we go through these cycles? What is it that our species does that always loses it? We create great civilizations, and we always destroy them. And the causes are not always the same, but the results are always the same. It goes through the same patterns over and over again. And to think that our own society, that the United States is immune from this cycle, is a very serious mistake. And the only way we can become immune to it is to realize that there are these cyclical developments. And it's good, therefore, to compare ourselves with others and to see the parallels between ourselves and these other great civilizations that arose here. I mean, ours is not the first civilization to have arisen in the Americas, by no means. Mm. There were dozens before us, dozens of civilizations before us that we know nothing about. And that, I think, is important for us to understand.
Well, when you put it that way, we don't have much time for this, but it begs the question, if we're born, if we grow up, and then we die, well, is it not inevitable then that a civilization dies? And we could say, well, we can learn other people died, so we can learn how not to die as humans. Doesn't sound like something that we're going to do, so maybe we're going to die anyway.
Well, we shouldn't take the analogy too seriously. It's just as an analogy is used to illuminate the problem and not to take it too directly. That was Oswald Spengler's, I think, downfall, is that he recognized the cyclical pattern in civilization and concluded that it is inevitable, that the tree lives and dies, so why shouldn't we as individuals and as civilizations? But civilization is not like an individual, and it is not like an individual tree. It is more like a forest, if you're going to take the analogy a little bit further.
Okay.
So, no, I believe that civilizations can flourish and be far more successful, but we have made the mistake over and over again. I think I've outlined some of the mistakes in the book. I guess we don't have time for that.
Are some of the potential solutions in the book?
I'm sorry, pardon me?
Are some of the potential solutions in the book?
No, I don't presume to do that, but I think it's good to hold up as an example some of the things, and I try to highlight those more successful examples of civilizations, like, for example, in another book that I've written just earlier this year is Before Atlantis. And in there, I talk about the Neolithic Age, which lasted for 3,000 years. That's a long time. That's a successful civilization. Mm. Lasted 3,000 years. And I think the cause for that is, the reason why it was such a great success, it was a golden age, was because people did not live in cities. They lived in small communities. They kept their distance from one another, just like the animals. You see, when the birds come at the bird feeder, sure, they all get along to eat the same seeds, but they keep their distance. And it's the same thing, I think, with human beings. When you jam people in large numbers into a city, you dehumanize them. But when you put them into smaller communities in which they keep distance from each other, it seems as though their human qualities are honored to the point where they can arise through cooperation, not through competition.
Wow.
But I think that's one of the history lessons that I have learned, is that societies succeed when they are relatively small and their population is in harmony and in balance with their environment. But when their numbers become so great that they encroach on their environment, that's when their civilizations begin to totter and fall.
Frank, this sounds like the beginning of a whole another show, but unfortunately it's the end of a previous one. But
all right.
Thank you for that, actually. That's fascinating too. And I'm learning so much. And at the very least, I'm learning that there's so much that we don't know, and so much that we have taken for granted that was true, that either whoever taught us didn't know, or for some reason didn't care to share, or didn't want us to know. But now it sounds like there's no reason not to know.
History is politics, and archaeology is politics as well, and that is a completely different show. But both you and I are nothing more than students of all this. No one is an expert in these things. We are just inquiring, and we're trying to learn, and we're making some observations. But this is all hot stuff.
It's
very
hot
politically
stuff.
Incorrect, and especially in the schools, that's politically incorrect.
Well, thank you for sharing the hot stuff, and I'm glad that we've been students together for this hour, and I'm sure we will be continuing virtually. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your information. Again, our guest is Frank Joseph, and I recommend going to ancientamerican.com. Frank, any last words?
I just want to thank you very much, Filippo, for this opportunity, and I think we've had a very good conversation. You had some insightful comments to make and some hard questions, and that's the kind of ideal interview that I most enjoy. I'm thankful for that. I'm very grateful.
Well, you're very welcome. It's been my pleasure. Thank you. And I want to thank Dorothy Donahue, our producer, for bringing Frank to the show. And to all of you who are listening, who give us the reason for doing the show, and want to remind you, I am Filippo Voltaggio, saying that as your life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network, and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes.